From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made yesterday morning as millions of American parents were confronted with deeply unsettling fears about sending their children to school. The mass murder of fourth grade students in Uvalde, Texas, has pushed parents to face some of the darkest thoughts imaginable. Writing for The Washington Post, Nana Efua Mumford says, quote, "Rationally, I know that my daughter's chances of dying by gunfire in school is roughly 1 in 10 million. But that means nothing to me. I'm worried about the statistic of 1. I'd already decided that I would never buy her light-up shoes, despite her many requests, because, whether fact or fiction, I once read that they could make her or her classmates targets if they had to huddle in a classroom. How about a bulletproof backpack? Should I buy her one of those? She already has such a small frame, it would probably be too heavy," end quote. Nana Efua Mumford's piece goes on to work through many of those kinds of fears and questions parents are asking. And this hour, we want to work through some of those emotions as well. NPR reports that there are 89,000 elementary schools in this country. As a parent myself, in one sense, the sheer math does offer me some comfort. The odds remain very, very low that children are targeted by gunfire at school. But when it does happen, the horror is so awful, so devastating, that it surpasses the kind of feeling we have when we consider, for example, the number of children who drown or die from bee stings. Those are tragic, always. And they are also part of a free society where kids play in nature. And I've heard those statistics invoked a lot this week. But you know, dying from the force of an AR-15 round is not part of nature. It is not inevitable or necessary or just part of the facts of life that some unfortunate children will face. It simply goes against every instinct we have as parents. So what do we do next? My guests this hour include three local mothers who are active in their communities. And let me welcome them to the show. Kara Austin, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Norma Holland, nice to talk to you. Nice to have you back on the program, Norma.
Thank you, friend.
And Kelsey Smith, thanks for making time, Kelsey. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well, Evan. Thank you for having me.
Can I start with you, Kelsey? I know that you did a little bit of writing about this and kind of just trying to process your own thoughts. Can you just start us off before I ask you to read some of what you written? And that's up to you. But how are you feeling on a morning like this now?
I'm feeling better than I did yesterday morning. I have a 5-year-old who is in UPK, and I have a almost 2-year-old who is in daycare. Yesterday, I was talking to my husband after the kids had went to school, and I mentioned that I was glad our daughter's classroom was not on the main floor, and he hadn't even thought of that. And I guess I hadn't until after she was there, and the thought of her being in school was tough, but it was necessary for her to be there.
Norma, how you doing?
Better, Evan. I think, like Kelsey, and I'm certain Kara will agree. I'm not going to speak for Kara because I know Kara has her own thoughts. But I will say that I do feel somewhat better. As I'll tell you, and I'm sure I'll share with you later on, it's hard to hear your own mother call you sobbing on the phone, saying, don't send your kids to school, right? Don't send your kids to the school's spring concert that was 2 nights ago, right? Same day as those kids were killed. And begging me not to send the kids. Right? But that was hard. That was a moment. It was very surreal. So I was not doing well. And I'm better, but I guess I'm going through stages of grief, like a lot of people. So, I was shocked. I was stunned. I was sad. And now I'm angry. And I've been feeling angry, Evan, for a good while now after what happened in Buffalo, which I'm sure, a lot of people are still thinking about.
And by the way, Norma, to be clear, your mother didn't sort of text or call to say, I'm nervous or she was actually asking you, like, please don't send them.
She was sobbing on the phone. If you know my mom, she's not a woman who expresses emotions. She doesn't cry easily. Let's just put it that way. So for her to call me and beg of me, do not send the girls to the spring concert tonight. That was hard. that was hard.
Kara, what about you? How are you doing?
Similar to Norma in the way that I think maybe today my emotions aren't as raw, but they're still there. And they cycle through a profound sadness when listening to the parents and the survivors of this horrible massacre, the profound sadness for that school, those communities, the teachers, the kids who survived and what their life is going to go like, and then just absolute frustration and anger at our society and our elected leaders who do nothing about this.
Well, I've got three guests on the program, and I've got to say, you know, I don't know exactly where their personal politics are or where exactly they, how exactly they vote. I reached out because in various places I saw some of their comments and some of their expressions as parents, and I think it's important for all of us to try to work through this together. We do try to be a place on this program where the community can talk calmly and rationally, even when there's deep divides and disagreements. And I do want to sort of highlight at the outset here, no matter where listeners are about whether we arm teachers or whether we put more police in classrooms or whether we build a fortress with one entry and multiple exits, you know, whatever happens, I think most people don't want kids to be hurt. I think people agree on that. It's just a question of how, what are we doing and how do we get there? And I want to ask our guests if they feel there is any room for sort of common ground and agreement, or does this start to feel intractable? I mean, where are you on that, Kara? Do you feel like you can talk to parents who might have a different view on what to do about this? And does it stay sort of calm, or is everything sort of fried and emotional right now?
I think I have the ability to talk to people like that. I mean, but it's also very fried and emotional, my emotions right now. Like, I would hope more than anything else that the majority of people could get behind wanting to keep our kids safe in school. In the beginning, you mentioned there are some activities that we participate in with our children as parents where there is an inherent risk. If you're going to the pool or going on a boat, the risk of drowning is present because you're in a body of water. But it's on you as the parents in that situation, knowing that risk, to assess what you're going to do about it. You know, you're going to put your kid in a life jacket. You're going to, you know, have them do swim lessons. Because the risk of drowning is the same. Like, it's an adult could drown. You know, it's nature. But I don't feel like we're – also, you mentioned in the beginning with, like, things like bulletproof backpacks, I feel like we're putting the onus on the children at this point to keep themselves safe from something that could be controlled in the larger, you know, like, in the larger spaces of government and regulations. And I hope that's – I hope that we could find common ground there, that it shouldn't be on the onus of the teachers and the students to take on a potential, you know, a gunman at their school. That responsibility falls to the community, the government, and people, and the adults.
I'm just going to sort of put a little bit of my own bias on the table, and I've mentioned this before. I do not ever want my son to go through an active shooter drill. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I don't want him to go through a training in a classroom. There is no evidence that it helps or does much good. And there is a growing, literally a profit-making industry with companies that get hired to do these trainings. And I'd like to think they mean well, but there is something really sick about that.
There's someone making a lot of money on those bulletproof backpacks right now.
Yeah,
disgusting.
Right, and I share Kara's feeling that when it becomes like, well, did you have a bulletproof backpack? It's like, are you blaming the children? Are we blaming the targets of this kind of violence, especially when those kids are 10 or 6 or 14 or whatever? But I don't want my – and maybe somebody feels differently, and I'm open to hearing that. Maybe you feel like it helps your kids or you to know that they've done active shooter training in school. I do not. I feel like that is nothing but traumatization. I cannot understand it. 844-295-TALK. I'll just pop the number here. Listeners, and we're going to talk about a lot of stuff this hour. 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Or you can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. I don't know if that was Norma jumping in. But Norma?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Me.
Yep.
So, Evan, you know, my father taught self-defense when I was a kid, right? And seventh-degree black belt to this day, you know, always taught us about preparation. Be prepared, be prepared. And in during the Cold War, people remember, you know, the drills. And we had fire drills, Evan, growing up, you know. And there's a lot of people who would say that preparing kids for this kind of thing is necessary. And you can argue that, you know, it's traumatization, but I don't know, Evan, I'm really conflicted on that. Again, so because my father instilled in me the need to be prepared, right? I sometimes think, you know, and you hear, you know, the phrase, right? Prepare the child, you know, for the road, not the road for the child. I mean, I don't know. I can't even get that far, Evan. I'm going to be real with you. I can't even get that far because right now I'm just having a hard time explaining to my 6-year-old and my 4-year-old what happened in Texas. I can't even come up with the words to say to them that a man shot and killed these kids. I can't even, I mean, she, and to be fair, she did. They asked me, what happened in Texas, Mama? I said, well, there's a lot of sad people there, and that's as far as I got. I don't even know how to bring it up. And I know that there's advice and tips and all this and that. I don't know. So I'm kind of, there's a jumble of emotions. And when I speak to parents about this, you know, last night at Little League, I asked a mom, I saw, you know, stuff going on in Texas, awful. And they all agree, it's awful, right? But that's as far as we get. We can't even get, you know, to what to do next or how to talk to the kids. Like, we're all just still processing it ourselves, right? So anyway, that's my point.
I hear you, by the way. I mean, I love your dad, and your dad's right that preparing for difficult circumstances or scenarios, fire drills, I mean, that's something we should all do. And yeah, I mean, I'm open to the debate on active shooter training. I want teachers to be trained. I want the adults in the building to be trained because that is the world we live in. It's possible that these things happen. So I do want that kind of training. But I don't know if I want a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old to envision what happens if a man with a long gun comes in and where do you hide. Kids are pretty good at figuring out. I mean, in Uvalde yesterday or a couple days ago, apparently all of the murder happened in one classroom. And the surrounding classrooms, those kids, those young, beautiful children, were instinctively quiet. They didn't need drills for that. So anyway, I'm hearing you, Norma. I mean, like I'm working through it just like you are. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm open to being convinced on that stuff. To me, though, it's a sad commentary in the world we live in that we're training kids for that, and I don't even know how to deal with that. But what do you think? What do you think, Kelsey? Where are you on active shooter training? Your kids are going to be going through school for many years. You want them to be trained on that?
I am honestly not sure about it. My bigger concern is the repeat trauma that they'll experience from learning about these things happening. Mm-hmm. I have not told my kids about what happened in Texas my 2-year-old wouldn't know, but my 5-year-old, she knew something was up because I brought her teacher's candy bars yesterday just as a way to say thank you and acknowledge that they probably had a really tough day. And but just told her that, you know, there's some really bad things that happened and people were really sad and left it at that. But my biggest concern is for children and for us as a society is the repeated trauma. We never get to come up for air. And while I know I didn't know anyone in Texas, I didn't know anyone personally in Buffalo, but it still impacts us and it builds on itself. And if you never come down from that heightened anxiety of experiencing trauma, you never can recover, and it can start impacting your personality and how you interact with the world. And I don't want to live in fear. I don't want my children to live in fear. I want to be prepared, and I want them to be prepared. Does that mean active shooting drills in school? I'm not sure, and maybe it's because I haven't really been faced with it for more than 2 days, thinking about it as we're, you know, approaching kindergarten orientation for next year. But I'm really worried about the repeated trauma to our children and to our society, and no one ever being able to come down from it and even have a good conversation that can get to the points that we need it to get to make the change that will take a long time that is necessary to keep kids in school safe.
Before I take a few phone calls, let me just, Norma mentioned being at Little League last night, and, you know, everybody agrees what happened. It's horrible, and there's some communing that happens there, but you said that's as far as you got. Norma, you've always been a bridge builder. I mean, I've known you for years, and I think you do a really wonderful job. You've done it in your professional career. You do it in your personal life at not caricaturing people, listening to people, understanding that people disagree legitimately, not just because they're, you know, bad people. Do you feel like this is an issue that eventually that you're going to be able to sort of work through differences with other parents when their proposed ideas here are very, very different than yours?
Yeah, because what I always try to do is think of what is the common ground. We all want our children to be safe. All right, I don't know anyone who would say to you or to me or to anyone, you know, I don't want my kids to be safe in school. We all want our children to have childhoods. We all want them to be kids. We all want them to have that experience. So if you can start from there, I think that that's the place to start, right? And so if you start from there, okay, so now what do we do? Right, to build that cocoon of protection around them. And that's where a lot of us differ, right? So some would say, one way, another might say another way. I don't like to take sides on things very often, but when it comes to my kids and when it comes to their safety, there's the line in the sand, I'm going to draw it, right? Conversation inevitably is going to go to issues of gun control. What kinds of weapons are we allowing people to have? What are we doing with security? Are we having security? Are we arming them? Are we not? Should teachers be armed? And that, so now the conversation comes, well, how do you build that protection of safety around kids, right? Or that wall of safety? And you're going to have differences of opinion there. And then you know where it goes, Evan. It goes into the rights and my rights and your rights and our rights as Americans and all this and that. And it's like, I'm all I can think about is I can't imagine being asked by a law enforcement officer to provide a DNA sample because my kid is unrecognizable. God forbid.
And it
angers me. So I'm just starting from there. That's the only place I can begin.
Yeah, I hear that. And let me just read a quick note from a listener and then phone calls. We got a lot of them. And we've got three local mothers active in their communities and helping process through this. You're hearing Norma Holland, Kelsey Smith, Kara Austin. But here's a note from a listener and was sent privately. I won't mention the name, but asking a really interesting question that this is a kind of point that I don't hear raised very often. She's saying that regarding active shooter training, why is it that the only thing we are doing is asking the kids to be trained? That's it. That, to me, she says, is the issue. If we're going to put our kids through somewhat traumatizing training, what are we asking adults to do that's hard? We are asking children to give something up. And what we are asking them to give up is the carefree notion that school can never be a place that's not attacked as if in war. We are asking children as young as 5 and 6, 4 years old, 8 years old, 10 years old, to give up going to school and not feeling some of that fear and trauma. So that's a lot that we are asking kids to give up. So this listener is asking a really good question. What are we asking adults to give up? Nothing? It's out of bounds? There's nothing we can give up? Only the kids have to give up something. Is that right? I think that framing is a very interesting way to put it. I'm not sitting here, please don't say, oh, Evan on a show said everybody's got to give up every gun they own. I mean, we've got more guns than people in this country. I don't think we can do it. I mean, I'm sure we can't do it. I mean, I'll have 3 emails before the end of the hour saying, come take my guns. I'm armed. I'm ready. Okay. We're not going to come take them. I guess that's what we're doing. But what are we going to do? What are we asking adults to do? We are asking kids to give up a lot. What are we asking adults to do? To your phone calls, let me start.
Evan, can I just reply to that real quick?
Yeah, please.
Because when Norma mentioned the idea of we do fire drills, that got something going in my head. I was like, fire drills are the final thing they do. There are so many regulations about how to keep schools from catching on fire before we get to the need to actually evacuate kids. It's in our building codes. It's like you can't have space heaters. They do all these things ahead of time. And if it, all else fails and there is a fire, then the kids are leaving school. And I think that's what's missing from this.
I hear that. I mean, I hear all of it. I hope people hear that I'm an angry parent too, but I'm trying to still be generous. We still have to try to really be generous and loving with each other, even when we disagree. We've got to try. We must try. I mean, not to be trite, but you go back to the many years of George Carlinisms, where he was telling us that the people at the top with all the power love it when we are attacking each other.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try not to. Let's try to keep talking. All right, look, to the phones we go, and I'm going to start with Benjamin in Rochester. Hi, and we'll get through all the calls, I promise. Hi, Benjamin, go ahead.
Hey, Evan, great show as always. As far as training children, I'm a veteran. We train intensely in boot camp for weeks upon weeks. And then once you're assigned your duty station, you repeat training and repeat training and repeat training and repeat training to prepare for war. Is that what we want for kids? It's completely backwards. It's completely backwards. It makes no sense. These children should not be training for war, and that's what we're asking them to do. And that's my opinion on training active shooter drills.
How about training adults in buildings, Benjamin? Do you view that differently?
No. I don't know why we would train for war. I mean, you can have a general understanding, but, you know, set of rules like a fire drill, but doing something like training children, five-year-olds, six-year-olds for war is insane to me. It's absolutely insane.
Benjamin, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for your service as a veteran of this country. We appreciate that. And just trying to read through some of the recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics. A doctor sent them. I'm going to try to do my best during our only break of the hour coming up just to kind of make sure that I can summarize what AAP is saying about whether we should be doing this in schools. But I'll get back to that in a second. Let me keep working through your phone calls. And Rich, next in Rochester. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing? These first two points are basically where I'm going with it. Even during the Cold War, all the drills that we did, they would have amounted to nothing if something happened. It seems like our active shooter training is more to soothe the parents. And so the first note that you read, I don't think the parents. I think the parents are leaving it up to the school to do it, and I think the society is. But in the end, the school is not. They're just not built to do this. And are we going to steal our children's childhood from them? I saw a picture yesterday. Someone put this up where this guy was standing in some school with his assault rifle. And this person was saying, yeah, my school is safe. So what are we going to ratchet this up to? Do we start having men and women walking around with armor and guns around in our school? I remember when I went on vacation in Mexico and I walked into a town and saw the police with Uzis. That in itself was almost traumatic. What are we willing to do to our children so that we feel comfortable? I go with that first letter. I don't think, as a society, we're willing to do what it takes to keep these children safe. I think we talk a good game. We're going to do a few drills, go run into this corner, do that. But you know what? If two or three people assault the building, all that stuff goes right out the window.
Yeah, I hear that, Rich. Thank you for the phone call. I'm gonna send it over to our three guests to kind of respond and share their own thoughts on this. As I do, though, I want to keep something in mind that's related here. You know, Rich is talking about all the things that are being proposed right now, and you know, you hear this from, you know, last night Senator Ted Cruz was saying, "How about schools with one entrance?" Now he's not talking about one exit. I mean, to be clear, I think there was some caricature or misunderstanding of his comments. He's talking about buildings in which there is one, only one entrance that is essentially fortified and guarded by armed personnel, that once you are in a building, you can exit in multiple ways, but there's only one way in. And it does exist. This exists in certain places, and the proposal is gaining steam in some political quarters that maybe that's what we should do. Make schools a fortress, one entrance, armed personnel there. And make it very unlikely that we're going to see anybody even try to get into a school. But here's where the dissonance comes in. You know, Rich is talking about, well, where else? Where do we stop with this? Well, Marco Rubio of Florida said you can't take away AR-15s because they'll just find something else to target kids or other people with, which to me is not a very smart argument because AR-15s do more damage than a lot of different things. But okay, let's set that aside. His point is you can't, if someone's determined to try to hurt people, even children, they're going to find a way. So doesn't the logic then say that if you lock down a school and you do it effectively, more effectively than we have now, are you going to lock down Little League games? Are we locking down outdoor theaters and performances and summer festivals, parades? We're going to lock those down, put glass around, bulletproof glass around parades? I don't know where you stop, because if the point they're making is someone's going to hurt somebody no matter what, I don't know where you go with this. I don't know. And I'm not trying to be snarky. I'm just trying to understand the logic here. Let me start with Norma. What do you think?
Okay. So, yeah. What about supermarkets, right? I understand that in this time of crisis, we are looking for anything to grasp that makes sense, right? We're looking for something. What's the fix? What can we do? And it's like, we could be here all day, Evan, talking about, well, we need to make schools safer. We need to make churches safer. How about you? The reality is there is no place that is safe. Your school is not safe. Your church is not safe. Your supermarket is not safe. You know, so then you say, okay, and look at, you know where I'm going with this argument, right? Where are we going? We need to start. So then there are people that say, well, it all starts at home. You know, it starts at home. And it's like, I'm not saying that any one of these solutions is wrong. I'm just saying that it might be an oversimplification of what needs to be done. This is a many-layered onion here. You're talking about there needs to be things done in tandem and maybe all at the same time, right? So it's unraveling this ball of yarn that we've got. It's a jumbled mess, right? And so looking for one thing is just, it's a distraction. I really feel like all of that is just a distraction. And we're not really getting at the root of the problem. Do I know what the root is? No. Right. I'm trying to keep my kids safe, and I'm not saying that's beyond me or I'm not worried about it, but you know, I have my ideas, right? I do. I have my ideas on what we can do. Am I going to share them here on this show? No. Because I know where that goes, Evan Dawson. But priority number one is I want to keep our kids safe. And maybe again, I'm thinking like John Holland's daughter, you know, he taught me, you know, how to defend myself. Do I teach my kids to be aware when they're in public? Yes, Evan, I'm going to. I'm going to teach my girls to be aware, to have situational awareness, to look for the exit, to know where they are in public. I am. I'm not happy to say that. You think that makes me happy? But at the same time, I've got my dad in my head. Honey, always be aware where you are. Know where you are. Right? Mm-hmm. Know where you are. Where are you going? Who's with you? All of that. That is arming my kids with as much as I can give them.
Can I ask you one question about that before I talk to your co-panelists about this? I mean,
yeah.
How do you balance that with my desire for my boy is I've always wanted to tell him the likelihood is that strangers are nice. I mean, we had this, the 80s and 90s, it was like stranger danger to the extreme.
Yeah.
And we had parents thinking, you know, you better not talk to anybody you've never met. And, you know, like this idea that, and I'm sure the news media and some of the tabloid media especially played up every abduction, especially abduction of a white blonde girl. Every time that happened.
That was my childhood. That's the 80s. Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. So so I want to be able to teach him, you know, like people are loving and kind. And you don't get in a car with somebody you don't know. You know, don't be stupid. But don't assume that the next person you meet that you haven't met is a threat to you. At the same time, what you're saying is recognize when a threat is presented and what to do about it. And I think we can split that difference, can't we?
Evan, I'm trying to do two things here at once. I'm trying to raise compassionate, loving, trusting children. But at the same time, should they feel in danger, I want them to know how to defend themselves.
Yeah,
I want them to know how to protect themselves and protect other people. It's the reason I teach my kids, don't you bully, but if you see a kid being bullied, you stand in the gap. You protect that kid. So, again, you know, I'm trying to strike a balance, right? Trying to raise great, compassionate, loving, sweet, tender kids, right? But ones who, you know, if they need to, they know how to defend themselves.
Yeah, I hear that. Absolutely. Kara, what do you think?
When presented with this idea of, like, you know, bubbling in everything with bulletproof glass to protect our kids, I can't help but think of, I mean, it's the data that you look at the other countries, you know, our peer nations, where this doesn't happen at the same frequency or magnitude that it does here, and they don't have bubble, you know, like bulletproof glass on everything. That's not their life, but it doesn't happen there. There are other things they've done to take precaution. It doesn't eliminate gun fatalities completely. No. But if we weren't going to make laws or enact change because it wouldn't solve the problem 100% all the time, we wouldn't have any laws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, get out of here with this stuff that, like, well, you know, this law won't matter because people won't follow it. Well, then why do you have
exactly.
laws? What are we doing here? What are we doing?
Okay, can I ask a question? Is it a culture thing? Are we so coarse a culture that I'm serious, like,
that we don't value life?
I'm asking.
We value
question.
Life at specific times.
Yeah, but,
and that's another frustration.
I don't think we're any. I don't think we are so unique as to being nihilistic that it explains the number of gun-based fatalities in this country over all others. We are not extreme in that regard. We are not uniquely, pick any term that you hear lately, godless, you know, anti-community, anti-social, struggling with mental illness, which, by the way, doesn't usually present as violence. No, I don't think we're
and
unique.
And all the other countries struggle with mental illness, too. They all have violent video games. They all have rock music.
Absolutely,
all the things that have been blamed. They've blamed violence on in the past. All those countries have those.
I do
but
think
they don't have this problem.
But to Norma's point, I do think we should be asking, though, when people don't feel a sense of belonging, people have to feel like they belong to something.
Absolutely.
And I am nervous about, especially the last 2 years, and what we've lost with the different things that we can belong to, the different things that have closed, the community groups that have dissolved. That's a danger. And it's especially a danger in a country as armed to the teeth as we are. Just drowning in guns. That's a danger.
There's more guns than people.
Yeah, more guns than people. So, Norma, I think it's like a yes, no. I don't think we're unique, but I think we are uniquely in danger from that, given the proliferation of firearms. Where are you at, Kelsey?
Well, we can't lock everything down. And I wouldn't want to live in that world either.
I wouldn't either.
I'm excited to go to a parade with my kid, but do I have my head on a swivel? Yes. And part of that is just life experience. And I want to be able to teach. For me, I need to find a way to teach my children how to be prepared without fear. And that is making sure they know where the exits are. And sometimes it's just strictly common sense, right? You go to a movie theater, they even remind you at the beginning of the movie, like, where are the exits? But, like, just to go one step beyond that, how I'm going to do this, I'm not sure. Maybe it's leading by an example and just kind of pointing stuff out when we're at gatherings. But it's tough. It's hard enough to be a parent and then to have our kids living in a world that is so very different. I know every generation goes through this to some extent, but it's so very different. We have no one to turn to say, like, hey, how do you survive a pandemic? How do you take, we've closed down very, very much since 2020. We had a baby in 2020. And how do we take our kids who have very little outside school and daycare social experience and kind of integrate them back into the world and make sure they strike a balance with boundaries and safety and being prepared without fear. And I don't have an answer. I don't want to see the world shut down. And I do think that there is a deeper rooted problem that needs to be fixed. But until that can happen or that ever happens, I think as a parent, I just want to raise kind kids who are willing to protect themselves and others if they need to, and know how to stand up for themselves and know how to notice things that don't seem right and speak up if they have to.
Well, after this only break of the hour, it's all your phone calls the rest of the way. A listener who asked an anonymous because they are a middle school teacher who just had a lockdown drill before lunch sent me a note saying, where do we go from here? We ratchet up the fear and then we increase gun sales. This teacher goes on to say, that's what Marco Rubio and his like are saying. I'm sorry that you had to go through a lockdown drill before lunch. I hope it's helpful. I really hope these things are helpful. Kelsey Smith, Norma Holland, Kara Austin, three local parents joining us to talk about how we process all of the events of this week. Mass murder of children in a school. And we're back to your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, the town of Webster is getting ready for a big electronics recycling event. And this is a perfect time for us to have the experts in answering your questions. What can be recycled and what cannot? Where does it need to go? What ends up in the landfill? What's changing? You've got questions on recycling, I'm sure, and they've got answers next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I'm sometimes hesitant to send people to Malcolm Gladwell's work. I like some of it. Some of it I go, yeah. And then I go like 5 minutes later, I'm like, no. But it's usually thought-provoking. And he wrote a piece for The New Yorker a number of years ago about mass shootings. And so listener Vince writes and says, how about assuming some of these things are going to happen? We spend more time researching the possible causes. As a 60-year-old, these sorts of things didn't happen 40 years ago, and guns were under less lock and key than they are today. I think the possibility has to be with current technology. I hear no one considering or investigating the possibility of violent video games or desensitizing current generations. I would just say, Vince, number one, those video games are played in every country in the modern world. And what's the difference? What's the difference? Second of all, Gladwell's piece talks about contagion. The first mass shooting, whether that's out of the clock tower or if you think about them in schools like Columbine, the first one is unusual to the extreme. The second one, very unusual, but a little more likely. The third one, less unusual, more likely. And the 100th becomes kind of common. There is a contagion effect, and every single time this happens, it makes it more likely it will happen again. That's the hard reality here. And because it's not happening in other countries, we don't see the acceleration of future events. We've got a bit of a domino thing happening here, and we've got to do something. But let me get back to your phone calls. And boy, I'm so sorry if you've been waiting. Let's try to get through everybody. Maggie, next. Hi, Maggie in Rochester. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm going to apologize in advance because I'm probably going to cry. But I'm a mom of four girls from preschool to high school. And I think that unfortunately sometimes the gun control debate, while I understand that it is important and there are important points to be made in the gun control debate, I think sometimes it becomes a distraction from the very clear correlates and connections that we can make about planned mass shootings that do have the potential to help us keep our children safer. As one of your guests said, we're constantly searching for narrative. We're constantly searching for what connects people. What pattern can we see that can help us understand this? And there are two unbelievably clear statistical correlates of mass shootings. The first is domestic violence, right? It is engaging in domestic violence, and it is almost always violence against women. And the second is being a man. These shooters are overwhelmingly men and often young men, right? And so I think that one of the things that we have to do is ask ourselves as a culture, what is happening with our men and boys? We can talk about video games, and if that's the case, then maybe we as parents need to be spending more time with our sons, active and overseeing their online lives, because we know that violent misogyny and racism and the things that radicalized the terrorists in Buffalo, we know that that was his online life. But at the same time, I think that we have to start taking this seriously and addressing these issues where they live, because we can restrict guns all we want. We can traumatize children through active shooter drills. We can make them terrified. We can make ourselves terrified. But we have to figure out why These men and boys are picking up these guns and murdering their mothers and murdering their wives and murdering our children. We have to figure out why, right? And maybe we don't need AR-15s. Maybe we don't need any of that stuff. But I think that unless we start talking about what is going on in a culture of violent, misogynistic masculinity that happens, we are going to miss what's happening here. Every time that a middle school boy starts to become aggressively angry at a girl who won't date him, that is a potential school shooting issue. And we don't treat it that way. We treat it like middle school love affairs. We treat it like bullying. These are the things that snowball out. And I think that we just have to start asking the right questions. We live in a country that has a constitutionally protected right to the Second Amendment. It's not going anywhere, right? So why don't we zoom out a little bit and figure out why some people, a minority of gun owners, right? This is where the gun people are right. A minority of gun owners are picking up those guns and hurting other people. And that's it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Maggie. I'm sorry. I mean, there's nothing more to say. I hear you and I feel it. Kelsey, I'll start with you. What do you think?
I agree with what she's saying. I do think that there is a very, very core problem here that we need to figure out and start at the bottom and work their way up. And I wish I had an answer. I don't know what that is, but I think a lot of it has to do with you see something, say something, right? There is a tightrope to walk. You bring up something about someone you've noticed, and I think that there just has to be a good vetting process in place so it doesn't ruin somebody's life. If there's a huge kid who seems to be an outcast in school and you're worried about it and you speak up, like, is that going to, you know, ruin that kid's reputation the rest of school and make things worse? But there is a problem that is deeper than just the guns.
Kara Austin, what do you think?
I'm in the camp of both. We have to do both because I agree. And, you know, there's a very good documentary out there called The Mask We Live In about the impact of what is in our American culture, the ideal male persona. And how that kills our young men and boys. Because if they fail to live up to that and they are tormented and bullied or made to feel inferior and they have, you know, easily access a weapon, that's where these things happen. Because again, bullying exists in other countries. Domestic violence happens all over the world. But when it turns from dealing with those issues and being impacted by that to a massacre, that's where we're different again. We absolutely have to address what plagues our young boys, you know, and it starts early. It starts as early as, you know, before, you know, these kids are in preschool, kindergarten, first grade. Those things we've, you know, said are the valuable aspects of manlyhood or what it is to be a man, to, you know, to not be a girl because you throw like a girl, fight like a girl, whatever. We make being a man the pinnacle of what this unattainable idea of being a man, what these boys are looking up to and failing to reach. And then we have these problems. And I know Norma has two girls, but like you have, and I have a little boy, and that's part of the way my husband and I are raising him. And that's like, again, tying into other issues that have been on the program lately, schools are, you know, introducing things like social emotional learning that are, you know, to better equip kids to handle their emotions in constructive, nonviolent ways. But that's under attack too. So what can we do?
Yeah, it's really interesting you bring that up, Kara, because there is some overlap here. All of the, not all of it, but a lot of the attacks on sex education is based on, you know, you ask people to be specific and they start saying things that are literally not being taught to kindergartners. Instead, Scandinavian models that a lot of sort of American practitioners are now trying to implement here simply say healthy relationships. Not pushing or touching people, like little kids poke each other and saying, that's not funny anymore. She asked you to stop. You got to stop. Like starting that at a lot younger, understanding boundaries, that kind of stuff does matter here. And that's part of so-called sex education. It freaks people out, apparently, in some places, but it is part of teaching kids to grow up to be respectful and maybe not dangerous. And Norma, go ahead.
Yeah,
all right, Evan.
Sorry.
Oh no, go ahead.
And I say, I mean, I wasn't even touching on the sex education part as much as just social emotional learning.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you do with those big feelings? You know, the Mr. Rogers thing. What do you do with the mad that you feel? And you don't, you know, it's if you're feeling that mad and it's taking a physical manifestation, go punch a punching bag. Go for a run. There are things you can do to get that initial feeling out. And then when you have collected yourself, you can solve the problem that's at the root of the anger without hurting anybody.
Okay, so I'm gonna go one step further because I'm loving this conversation about social emotional, about our culture of violence, which is what I was trying to get at earlier, is that our culture, it's a culture of violence. And then what I wanna also talk about is if all of these other nations have what we have, if our central humanity is shared, right? We are all human beings. We have the same instincts. Right? Now, we're not special because we're American. We are human beings. One thing, number one, respect for other people. Do we teach our kids to have a central respect for other people? And that gets to all the things that the caller was talking about, that Kara's talking about, that you know, Kelsey has been talking about, a central, basic respect for others, for their property, for their personal space, for whatever. Then, you get to, okay, so now we are not exceptional. We are like other people in other nations. But what separates us from them? Access to weapons?
That's one.
Access to kinds of weapons?
That's another.
Mm-hmm.
So you see where I'm going here? This is a many-layered problem. So, let's teach kids to be respectful of others, right? And let's create connection where there hasn't been, which is what we've not done in 2 years. We've not had good connection with other people, right? And so then we have to ask ourselves, do we need AR-15s? Do we need access to all the weapons all the time? The first thing this kid did when he turned 18, what did he do?
Bought two AR-15s, yeah.
Yeah. Who's the first person he killed? His grandmother.
Yeah.
I mean, again, so you got to – was this kid just chomping at the bit the whole time? He knew the laws, right? He must have been reading up. He knew exactly what he was going to do. He knew exactly that he could get them. There were no – I mean, were there red flags raised? Did anyone raise the question, why is this kid buying all this – like, I'm not attacking people with guns. I'm not saying I don't want people – I'm not saying I'm against the Second Amendment. I'm not saying I don't want you to have a gun. All I'm pointing out is the obvious here.
I hear that. Let me grab another. Let me sneak this in from Mark in Rochester. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
So I'm going to try. There's three things that I have. One, when the Second Amendment was adopted, guns were you had to pack it with powder, put the thing
slow
down there,
yeah,
you know, yeah, and so on. So yeah, you had one shot and you could reload, and it took you about 2 or 3 minutes to do it.
Yep.
Second Amendment, does that cover AR-15s, machine guns, nuclear weapons? You know, what's my right to bear arms? So that's thing one. Thing two is these events, and these break my heart. It's so horrible. They are exceedingly rare. They do seem to be getting more frequent, and they're terrible, but they are rare. It's also very rare for people who are experiencing mental illness to commit violence.
That's right. Yeah.
So the fact that some young boys, 18-year-olds, men, whatever you want to call them, are actually committing violence means that there must be a huge amount of suffering in that 18-year-old or male population of that age that is not being addressed. So it's not necessarily figuring out how to stop these people from, you know, these two people or five people or even if it's 20 people across the country that do mass shootings, it's not how to figure out how to stop that 20 from doing mass shootings. It's actually how to figure out how to address the many, many, many thousands that must actually be suffering for a few to actually take up violence as a means of assuaging their mental or, you know, whatever their issues are.
Yeah. And just let me jump in, Mark, since we're down to our last 30 seconds. I think those are very fair and important points here. And I think they have to be part of this conversation. Mark's also right to point out that children are at higher risk of being shot accidentally by a gun in the home or getting hit by a car than being shot in a mass shooting. That is true. But the trauma here is very, very real. And I hope we've at least provided some measure of grace and communing here. But Mark, thank you for that. I do appreciate that. And I want to thank the parents who've taken the time to come on and share their thoughts. Norma Holland, great having you. And you know, I know you edit yourself at times, but you can always cut it loose here. I just want you to know
that. You sure you want that?
I love you. I love you, and I'm really glad to have you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Kelsey Smith, thank you for making time. I know it's been a rough couple days for you and your family, just kind of getting through a few things, and thank you for being on the program and sharing your perspective.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Evan.
Kara Austin, I always appreciate talking to you. Thank you. Thank you for the really, I think, thoughtful perspective.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Boy, I certainly wish we were talking about anything else, but Kara, Norma, Kelsey, amazing people. And thanks, listeners, for all the thoughts here. We'll keep talking about these issues. I promise we've got more connections coming up in a moment.